All right, everyone, you want to grab a drink and have a seat? We'll get things fired up again.
Pay attention, folks. Will you please sit down? The big guy told me to say that. I'm afraid of him. Ladies and gentlemen, I worked on that hill for 29 years, and I worked with some of the nicest men and ladies in this whole county. And I would think, out of respect for the people that have passed on, could you all rise and we'll give them a moment of silence, because they deserve it. God bless you. Some of the people who passed away that I worked with, Alfie Brooks, Rex Park, Ernie Simmons, there's probably a whole bunch more, but my mind at my age isn't where it was.
Steve Grimes.
So thank you very much for giving them the moment silence. I know they would all appreciate it. God bless you all. Aaron, you can have your mic.
I think we need to get things going again with another a good story here. Doug, you seem like the kind of guy who can tell a good story.
Tell them, Doug!
You're already on the stage?
Cut the shit.
The story I have to tell you is beep, 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 beep. Because the things that happen to the officers and the people in the kitchen or the female officers, we are not allowed to really speak about it to the public. And the people who have went through what lots of us in this room have gone through, no. And I know that when I was finally out of corrections in 2007, I had to take 6 months of anger control management. And it still hasn't helped me.
That's for sure.
Okay, and down on your knees, Patterson. Anyways, a lot of us that were out of the kitchen and working down in the shops or out on the floor went through an awful lot. And I don't know how some of us survived.
You're right.
And as long as we have. Because a lot of the people are like Jack Hinchcliffe, quite a gentleman. And Pierre LaRocque, another one. And Mr. Kuplin, you know, and it brings back memories when you think about them. Okay? Anyways, thank you very much for putting up with me. God bless you all.
The way that the institution was set up, the central control had all the keys for the joint. I'm going to refer to it as joint. And there's one guard would sit in central control, would be in there for a couple hours and be relieved. And quite often, when the guy was relieving, there was tear gas canisters and stuff. He would take and spray tear gas underneath the desk. So the next guy came in and sat down.
Oh, right.
Fair enough.
And you couldn't sort of get the chips and get the keys out, and everybody would count out, we need keys for this and that. But on the wall, on the central control, was a great big red button with a riot klaxon. And when this went off, then there was trouble in the prison and things had to be closed down. And so quite often, a brand new guard being trained, he would be at midnight shift, he would be put inside central control. He would get to look at all the keys and see how things organize and just sort of get himself set for the day when he'd be in charge of central control and all the keys. There was buttons in there for one wing, two wing, three and four wings that he could automatically push the button and it would open the door going into the guard station. And you could call out or hold up your fingers and say, you know, a two-wing open and push the button and the two-wing door would open to get into the door, guard sound plate. Of course, the library, it was just a wooden door and it didn't have any type of electronics to it whatsoever, just a wooden door. So, of course, there would be the brand new guard that would be like 2 o'clock in the morning. And one of us would phone the central control and say, could you hit the button for the library? Which one's that? It's the red one on the wall.
Oh, no.
And, of course, we would go to riot klaxons at 2 o'clock in the morning. And the sergeant, Keith Blair, or usually it was Keith, he would be running. The first place he'd run to wherever Gordy Van Dam where I was and accuse us of doing it. And I said, we can't do it. We're not there.
You put him up for some.
We would, lots of sort of tomfoolery in that. Here's another thing, with all the bombs that were being sent recently, we saw in the United States, different pipe bombs and stuff. And my wife had asked me, and they said, well, how could they go off if they didn't have timers and that? And I said, well, I'll tell you, an ingenious thing that inmates used to do in Newark. They had straight razors in them, not straight razors, but a double-edged sort of razor. And you needed a long Allen key that went up the center part of the handle of this razor. And at plate change day, an inmate had to come out of his cell and produce his razor. You put the key up in there and undid it, took the blade out, made sure the blade was there, put a new blade in it, and then tighten it in there so the inmate couldn't get the blade out to make it a shiv or any type of a knife with it. So what the inmates would do, a brand new inmate would come in there and get his razor allotted to him. They would somehow talk their way that they could sneak into his cell and back again when there was inmate movement, and they would take his razor. And what they would do is they would take match heads, they would smoke in those days, and they'd break the match heads off, and they'd stuff them inside the tube of his razor, and then wrap it in toilet paper. Guards on the night shift, they had to go through every wing, look in every cell window to confirm that there was an inmate. And they had a pipe chase at the end of the wing that they click a clock punch so that we knew exactly where they were there. The inmates would time it, wrap the toilet paper around this razor, light it on fire, and then slide it underneath out the cell door. So as when the heat of this would just about, when the tide of time it when the guard was coming in or close to coming in, and it would explode. And let me tell you, at 3 o'clock in the morning in a prison, and there's no sound, all from his razor, all over the wind. And it was just an attempt to kind of guard or whatever. So we always had to sort of be, if you saw a fire in a wing at night, run the other way, like you know, get behind the cover, and because there was thick glass in the control rooms and stuff like that. And sometimes they would just burn out and they wouldn't explode. But every once in a while, you get one that would go off. So yeah, they always had to be sort of cognizant of the fear of what they would do. They had 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, 2 years less a day, or think of ways to screw you up, because what else would they do? What fun would they be? So this is something that you can do.
One thing which when researching the Celia talked about was that apparently Millbrook, people would request to be sent to Millbrook because the food was top notch. Did anyone in here work in the kitchen, work with anyone in the kitchen, or can talk about the kitchen and the food process?
George!
George, tell them how you made the donuts.
No, I'm not.
Tell us about the kitchen.
About the food and the soup, huh?
Just like the kitchen.
No pressure.
You see this big food here? One day I was on East Entrance. Mr. Corp come through the back grill with 75 pounds of potatoes on each shoulder and 75 under each arm. And an inmate said to me, "Who's that? What's you doing with them?" So I'll show you. I said, "I'll show you after." So I took the young man down the floor wing, went into the ME room, and I see, "You see that spot on the floor where it's got the four screws in it?" "Yeah." "No, yes, sir." I said, "Mr. Corf comes in Tuesday mornings at 2:30 in the morning, every 2 weeks, opens up the bags of potatoes, drops them down the chute there, and feeds the alligators." And the young man believed me. One of the nicest gentlemen that ever worked in the kitchen.
Yes.
Mr. George.
Great.
Thank you, sir.
George, I was told that you would have the best stories tonight. I was actually messaged in advance.
I'm ready to him right and go that post on the roof or something. I have a ladder on the shoulder. And I want to go to speed. Remember you on that, buddy?
That's a story?
Make cinnamon rolls in the kitchen and would start at 5 in the morning making cinnamon rolls. By the time the guards were coming in on the 7 o'clock shift, the cinnamon would be floating all through the institution. 200 inmates, I'd have to make 600 cinnamon rolls. One girl that worked in the kitchen had one guard begging down on his hands and knees for a cinnamon roll.
Best cinnamon buns you'll ever eat. Right there.
Yeah, they were good.
No, there was no inmate work for
sure.
Exactly. Up in Quincy, we had inmate work. Yeah, not good.
Not good.
What would be an average meal? Like, what would some of the meals be?
Pizza.
Pizza.
Pizza. We made homemade pizza. Oh, yeah. Right from scratch, the dough, everything. They got roast beef. Liver, yeah, steaks,
Susan, what about
shepherd's
the,
pie.
What about the boot and the soup?
Yeah, where'd the boot
and the soup?
I don't know about the boot and the soup.
Oh, that's a good one. George is
that'd
so
be you.
Yeah,
we used to make
homemade
pizza. We used to have a one-guard very stiff.
Boo-boo.
He was our soup tester. He'd come every day and test the soup to see if it was okay to serve. I don't think I'd have tested that.
Oh, yeah. Just sort of paint a picture of how they were fed. Inmates, there was no cafeteria. Every inmate ate in his own cell. And these wagons, when I was there in Georgia, unless it changed, it's always the same. And the wagons were prepared by the staff.
And they'd, each wing had their own wagon. There was 26 cells in a wing, so you could have the meals all sit there. They were all covered in a tray, and they were put in a drawer, and these were all plugged in with a cord. And at mealtime, the guard in charge of, if I was in three wing, let's say, I would go up and get the three wing wagon and then wheel it down there, because there was inmates that may have special requests or have food allergies or soft diets or something like this. And so they were all numbered in the trays, and so like just like the cells were. So if you were in three west, there was your meal, and it may be something special that was prepared for you. And they ate with a spoon. There was no knives or forks in Newport. It was just a big spoon. And so you, depending on how many inmates you had in your wing, if you had 26, you had a full wing, you had 26 inmates, you had 26 spoons, and they were on the tray. So an inmate would come up, he'd pull the tray out, he would open up the drawer, take his meal out, put it on top of the lid on top of the wagon, and they would go to their cell, and then he'd be closed in the cell. You'd always have two guards, one feeding and one working all the doors. And so once that inmate got his meal into a cell, the door was closed. The next one was, and that's how you fed them, and that's how they ate. And you, every wing had a wing changer. He was like a guy, like the range boss that you may see in a television program. Well, the wing cleaner ran the show in that wing. And he was a guy that was loose all day. Other inmates, they were locked up. And the wing cleaner could walk around and he could get them off the floors. He could do whatever. He could create whatever havoc he wanted to create during the day. But he was probably the toughest guy in the wings. He ran it. So when you had to count your spoons every, at the end of a meal serving, you had to have 26 spoons on that tray. So the first thing is you look and you count them up, you get 25 spoons. And you say, short a spoon, and you get silence. And so you close the door, you move the thing up. You say to the wing cleaner, you got 2 minutes. And tap, tap, tap. Hey, boss, got your spoon. You know, and then the spoon would come out, and then you take the tray back. You know, somebody decided maybe they were going to make a knife out of it. And there was a collection of knives and chibs and stuff that over the years that was amazing. The one thing when they did get their razor blades out of the out of their shafts that weren't supposed to be opened up, they would take and melt them onto under a toothbrush. Cut some of the bristles out, so enough of the bristles went through, put it through the slot of the razor blade, and then melt the rest of the bristles over the razor blade, so they'd have a with a bobblehead blade attached to it. So that was something they would make. But the feeding system, and that's how it worked. No inmates worked in there at all. You would have a group two scrub team. It's not even politically correct. I guess how to do it, but they were the kind of the transvestites of the day. Like we're going back in '72, and it's a long time ago when you called them queens and all the rest of it. And of course, if you were the guard in charge of the group two scrub team, you were queen for the day, and you had to go around. Of course, and they would. In the morning, they would pour the cells and they had all the makeup on. Like they would have Laurentian colored pencils and they would do their eyeliners.
Not so much in jail, but
and then
in general.
Their t-shirts, their singlets, all their tie-back, looking beautiful, and their hair all done up. They'd come out to scrub the floors. And of course, you would be taking all the heat from all the rest of the guards at the end. They would go in and do some of the cleaning on the wagons, but that's as close as they got to a meal. I remember being on Guelph one time on training, and an inmate who had made it out of Millbrook eventually got reclassified. He was working in the kitchen at Guelph, and he took me aside and he said, "Boss, don't eat here." Thank you very much, and it's a cool way of when I got out of line and took off. He said, "Where are you going?" "I'm going." When he said don't eat her, I guess he meant it. So that's how they're all done. They were, and the meals were I mean, absolutely they was nothing in there that you wouldn't be having at home, believe me. And most of us wouldn't be having it at home. But the other thing is they had solitary confinement in Millbrook. And when you had inmates that you just couldn't control, and they were sentenced to 10-day solitary confinement. And in these solitary confinement cells, there was no toilet or anything like that. It was just a hole in the floor with a brass ring, and it would flush every 20 minutes inside this empty room. And there was no bed in there. They just were given blankets at nighttime. And it was just like a heavy quilted blanket. And if they were put on a special diet, depending on what they did, or whatever institutional rule that they broke, the special diet was like a bean cake. It was, I don't know how you would explain this, but it was very nutritional. Oh no, there was all kinds of stuff in there. But it was set up, and it was called bean cake, and it was pressed in these big trays and cut into about a 3.5-inch square. And it was served on a little paper plate. And that was the meal, and they could get that was not to exceed 10 days. If they were on a special diet, which was the bean cake, they could not exceed 10 days. And that's what they eat. Lots of times an inmate would ask for a glass of hot water in a paper cup, and they'd break up the bean cake as square into this and mix it up so it makes like a lovely little Alpo street that they could eat. Other than that, it wasn't appetizing, but it was and then it was particularly bad. They one day we saw a bean cake and big old eggs and a paper plate and something else. There was aspects of it that were not pretty as far as the solitary component and some of the meals that they would have, and inmates would get just definitely on it and send it back. Often you would see that in times where inmates would defecate in the cells and smear all over the windows so you couldn't see inside the window, and the walls that were covered in feces, and it was up to us as guards to go in there and hold and clean up. And we didn't have cleaners. We couldn't sort of phone up and say, you know, clean up in aisle four, you know, to cell four, and we were involved and we'd have to go in there and there's one of the Alec Baldwin, I don't know if some of the old guards remember him. They were the flattest feet in the world. He says, I can't walk backwards. But he'd put on a big pair of rubber boots and turn on the hole to turn on. Open the door.
Never had another one.
And that's how you'd start. The stench was just unbelievable. To deal with John Ball, man. And the worst too, because it was such a closed environment, so there were no windows. The only little window in the cell was just a little slide and little hallways that went out. And they just to get a little bit of wind or air through it, and they had those light blocks that were translucent, so they couldn't sort of see out what light would come in. And especially like in Five Wing, which was a detention wing, they had bought these mattresses, these non-flammable mattresses. I remember there was a guideline that came out, should the non-flammable mattresses catch fire, what you were to do. And they created chunks of toxic smoke that you couldn't imagine. So what an inmate would do is suicide attempt, or sometimes it wasn't a suicide attempt. Didn't work out well. They would take the mattress and hold it down against the door, and then take whatever papers they got, and they would light that on fire. And as the wind would come down through the little hole in the window and down underneath the door, it would create almost like a forge effect with the gas furnace effect, and it would start to burn and burn the muscle. And we smoke to go underneath the door and we can start to close the institution. Well, there's no doors or windows, and also no central air. There was just one by and fans. And of course, if you kept all that going, it would start to fill the institution full of smoke. And so you chuck down the fans and the wind would fire. And now you'd have all this black smoke building from the top down. And there was times when you would. You couldn't see, you couldn't breathe anymore. You couldn't even find the respiration equipment out there, and you would fill up with full smoke. And of course, now all the inmates are pounding and screaming and hollering because they're trapped inside a steel cell, and they can't breathe either. And on the particular night, the door had heated up so much that we couldn't open them electronically. And Gordy Van Dam tried to open the door and grabbed an inmate up and dragged them out. And he had been burned very badly. And burns, and yeah, and he was overcome. And the corporal went in, he was overcome, and then Gordy got the burns out, then the inmate, and all the skin came off his arms, and all this, and he survived. And his name is White. Do you remember that? Anyway, those things were really dangerous and really. One of those not a nice night to be working. Anyway, that's enough of that. I guess I'm very quick.
I think we'll move off of food after that. We'll,
Alex, there's somebody back here. just want to tell a funny story.
Can you just say your name?
Don't be afraid of
Jerry. My name is Jerry Burke. This will scare you. I used to work at Corrections. This can scare the shit. 89, maybe 2, 95. Anyhow, I remember working with Lori Robbie, Wayne Ellis, Howie Lemon, all those guys, Rick Walker, everybody. And it was a great time back then. It was the most memorable time of my life, really. We built the SWAT team at that time. I did the building up with the help of
Preston.
And we did the, we actually built the ISET team at that time. We began, remember Moose? And anyhow, even though Wayne now is burning down, I don't know. Just kidding, Wayne, I'm just kidding you. But anyhow, we had a good time, we always had a good time. But one of the funny things about the kid shift was one of the midnight shifts. And it was like, that was the nicest shift of all, because, you know, everybody's relaxed, everybody's sleeping, everybody's having a good time, and there's only about 7 or 8 of us on nights. You had the low wing, you had the top wing, but I remember Howie Lemon. I think everybody knows him, and he said to Ed Horling one night, "Do not go in the kitchen. We have complaints that you guards are going in there stealing food."
Quiet, George.
Steaks were on that night, pizza were on that night. It was a great night. Everybody had a good time. And Ed Horting, I remember him going in, and Howie Lemon just got finished saying the whole thing. He says, "Do not eat anything from the kitchen. We're going to get in shit." So the next thing you know, Ed Horting comes out and stuff. And Howie Lemon turns around and he goes, "Ed, you were in the kitchen." "No, I wasn't." And he goes, "Yes, you were." And he goes, and then the whole thing, "Into my office right now." But it was one of the funniest things. But I'll tell you something about Melbourne. I was only there for 7 years. Then I went on my own in my own business. But I'll tell you, it was one of the best times of my life. I had the best friends, and we still keep in contact. Bob Gardner, Steve Locke, all these people, we always keep in contact. Wayne Ellis, Blackie, myself, we're on the SWAT team. That's a family, and that's what Millbrook is today, a family. I just want everybody to be proud of what you did.
Yay.
Speaking to that, I heard a lot of good stories about one of the reasons we chose the Legion was apparently this was one of the go-to places after shift. I don't know if anyone has any good stories about that. Actually, you know what? Actually, I should go full circle. One of the reasons that sparked my idea for the story was chatting with somebody here at the Legion while drinking a beer on a Saturday afternoon, who was telling me about how the Legion was a totally different place back in the day. After shift, the place would be full of people coming down for beers after work, and it was, I've never known the Legion to be like that. You know, it was obviously before my time. It was an interesting way to do it. What other stories do we have? Oh, you said you had one.
I bought a Walton, and I was a nurse up at the correctional center for 4 years, I think. Anyway, at first, it's a totally different kind of nursing, and you really have to use your assessment skills. But while I was there, I worked with Lorraine Bell. Bell was gone, Diane Rowan was gone, and Paulette McCrae was not gone. Anyway, so as Dr. Van Loon was saying, you know, we have, the sick parade. In between, we had to quote with our wagon, our med cart, and give out the pills. And each wing had a little drawer with pills for each patient in it. And I want to tell you that they had to be soaked in water so that they were anyway, I remember this one inmate. He was an older gentleman, and to me, he ended up being kind of like a frequent flyer, because he would come in, and he would need to have glasses, he would need to have dentures made, he would be on like high doses of pills to help him sleep, because he couldn't sleep in the other institutions before he got to Millbrook. But by the time he left Millbrook, he was down to taking nothing other than like maybe one Tylenol a day. Yes. Anyway, so you know, he'd be discharged and then meet the bus out at the corner and, you know, go to Toronto, where he lived. And it wouldn't be long before he was back in Millbrook again. And he would need glasses and dentures. And one time when he went home, he met the bus at 8 o'clock in the morning, and about between 8 and 9 o'clock at night, I got a phone call from the Don jail, and they said, we have so-and-so here. He says he's just been on mail, and we're wanting to know what kind of pills he was on, because he's telling us, you know, he's on all these pills. I said, well, actually, he's not on any pills, but, like, does he have glasses, and does he have his dentures? Because he left the bus this morning. One time he told us he left us on the bus.
Yeah, okay, I think to take credit to the nurses and particularly represented by Lorraine Bell. Just a wonderful nurse up there. And on one occasion when I was assaulted during contamination, and Lorraine was in attendance there, she happened to be the closest. She flew across, and she was the first woman on top of this guy, and took him down. So, you know, the nurses really did a good job. This is a true story, and I'm sorry to... I don't want people, but actually what happened with, in Sixth Wing, there was a guy called, an inmate called Dirty Reed. He was a repeater. He came every year. Anyhow, when I was building the ISET down at the bottom of the hill, Gary Preston said to me at one time, he said, you go through the files and you find out who you would like to take down as an inmate to work with you. So I picked a couple inmates, went back fast. Like Gary Reed was one of the first ones that actually stayed right beside me for the whole term. And we did the ropes, we did the tower, we did everything. So anyhow, long story short, and I just wanted to say that, because I was just saying to Wayne Ellis, because it was such a, it is. There is rehabilitation. They did rehabilitate. I'll never forget, Rick Walker was involved, because I said to Rick, give me a pair of work boots, give me a nail bag, because I want this guy, he's got to go out the streets, he's being paroled or out. He was working in the annex at that time. Well, he was actually in Sixth Wing, we brought him to the annex, and then we brought him out to work with me, because he was one of the best knowledgeable carpenters. So anyhow, we took the whole summer to build this ISET course down in where Nationwide. And long story short, he came by after I quit Millbrook in 89 or 90, I forget which year I quit. So I was working with my son building a house in Ennisport. All of a sudden, this guy shows up. He said, Jerry Perkerell. My son said, yeah, he's over there. You want to see him? So he comes over and goes, boss, how are you? I said, not bad. How are you? He goes, good. He says, never been back in jail again. I said, really? So I turned to my son and I said, son, if I don't make it back in 5 hours, you fall in love. So anyhow, he took me down to a job site that he actually started, and he owns his own company now, and he was building the biggest house. And guy built big homes. He was building one of the biggest homes. He has his own company going, and he's doing great. Absolutely fantastic. I came back sick. It was okay. But I just want to tell you, rehabilitation does help with some. And it did with him. Gary Reed was one of my favorite guys. And I just want to tell you, there is a good side to every side.
Really?
My name's Wayne Davis, and I have with me here a couple of things. First is a picture of the first ICET team in Ontario Corrections that was started at Milford. And there are approximately five members here, plus two managers tonight.
Would you explain what ICET is?
ICET is the Institutional Crisis Intervention Team. If there was a riot in a wing, the old system, the alarm used to go off, and as many people as you could cram through the grill would go in and stop it. A lot of people got hurt. With the ICET team, basically the one thing they told us was time was on our side. And you come up with a plan, what was going on in the wing, how many were involved, and you set your plan, and then you went in and drinking everything up. Eventually, a lot of the bigger institutions in Ontario got their own team. Not on midnight shift. The other thing I have here is a collection of Ollie Sturgeon work there, and he was an artist, and he had pictures that were syndicated in newspapers for stuff going on in the government. But he, if something happened at Millbrook, he'd draw a cartoon of it and put it up on the wall, and it was amazing how he could capture the look of the person that was involved, and you knew who it was. I've got probably 100 of them here, and I can't tell you probably 5 years what they mean. Different people around here can tell you different things. But just to give you, somebody did up for one crime, you receive most of the package deals. 3 meals a day. Isolation or special diet for Weight Watchers, shower facilities, separate rooms, single occupancy, clothing supply, laundry facilities, done while you wait, sports field for athletically inclined, games room for the leisurely minded, radio and TV entertainment, occasionally movies, medical center with treatment staff, Sunday service in the chapel, has an ideal view for proper observation point, wake up service, air temperature control, warm, in winter cool, in summer usually, carefully chosen staff to cater to your needs, a chance to meet a new street partner, AA and other programs available for the trouble. There are only a few vacancies left, or bailiff is filling quickly. But anyway, that's just part of what went on at Millbrook.
Good times.
Wayne came up to me at the break and started showing me some of these comics, and the picture, I think everyone should check out the picture. The picture is fantastic. One of the other interesting stories that I remember my dad telling me isn't so much jail, but what the jail brought to town. And my dad used to take special enjoyment in picking up some of the women that would hitchhike into the highway and then need to get from the 115 in to come and visit the boyfriends while in jail. So in the distance from the cabin carpool to into town where he dropped them off in jail, he did the whole story. So he had quite the collection of stories just from the people that came to town.
So, I mean, the good news is the Legion has said that we can have a little bit of extra time to, you guys can all hang out and catch up after. But we do have to start to wind down the night. Not one of the more fun topics, but I was hoping somebody or some people could talk about the transition from Millbrook, where the super jail was created the last day. Can anyone talk about the winding down of Millbrook and how that happened? Got a story about that? Sure. And it's funny, I was going through some old stuff back in the summer. I found one of the Say No to the Super Jail buttons from back in the day that I still stashed in a box. I mean, I was in elementary school at the time, didn't really fully understand it, but I had a button apparently.
Years ago, I was asked to take a tour around the Millbrook when I was working there, and I had 21 years there, so they were all from Sleen's Park. There was maybe 10 or 11 with briefcases, and they all come down. My lieutenant said, take them around on a full tour of everything in Millbrook. Show them the fields, the buildings, the medical center, the kitchen, the cells, shops, show them everything you can. So we went around for 6 hours. I showed them everything. So at the end of the day, they said to me, now, with Millbrook, what would you do if you were in our hands, making a decision? I said, well, I think you're going to close it, but I said, I think you should put it to the Army, let the Army come in, because the Army can come in here with the kitchen, medical staff, warehouses for the equipment to come in, they got the yard for training, they have everything at Millbrook, bring the Army in. And I said, now, plan B would be, if you don't want to bring the Army in, put up a marijuana grow. You already got the walls, you got the security, Millbrook wants a jail here, so put a marijuana grow, I said, when it comes legal. Well, then Levin looked at me like I was a complete nut. And they said, tour's done. And they were gone. So the decision was made that they were going to close that deal. They didn't even listen to anything that I said about the jail.
Paul White.
Thanks, Paul.
Kind of described.
Oh. Put stuff in my bag.
Good evening. My name is Chad Chambo. I started at Millbrook June 27, 1985. For the first couple of years, I was the youngest guy in the place. I was there until the jail closed. Unfortunately, doing the transition from Millbrook to Lindsay, which I won't say too much about it other than it's not a good place. Well, yeah, we can't go politically correct any further than that. First of all, I'd like to thank the Millbrook Historical Society for tonight. Greatly appreciate it, long overdue. Second of all the fine officers that I had the pleasure of working with that are now done. Many years, some of them. Good to see everybody that used to work with. It was a hard transition. I remember getting called down to the chapel and being told that Millbrook was closing. Very sad day. Very hard day. A lot of us didn't know what we were going to do. We had heard about the jail in Lindsay. And it was hard. It was really hard. So Millbrook was, you couldn't find a better place to work. You couldn't find a better place to learn than these guys here. So Miss Millbrook, always will. Thank you.
That note, does anyone else have anything they want to share? Or
I don't want to share.
My name's Eric Patterson.
I started at Millbrook,
25 years in there, 8 years in I was very fortunate when I started. An awful lot of really good veterans, some military, some not. They were excellent people to teach us. They taught us to be fair, be honest with them. If they asked you a question, you knew it, right, tell them. If you didn't know, when you went and found out, told them. But also, if you couldn't tell them, then you told them right to their face, no, it's all right. But it was an excellent, safe building. It was a great layout. That's another story, but it was an excellent building. Sadly, we saw things that nobody else could see. A lot of stress on a lot of people, but for us, some of the stress, especially on midnights, we had humor that kind of broke out a lot. We had one lad that could take an inmate shirt and tie it into a rack. It was so real looking. It was just unbelievable. And like the wings, the date, it was like this. It was bright. But they, at night, it would go down to maybe three, maybe four small lights. Anyway, this guard would tie some string, or not string, it was heavy, heavy thread that they made the clothes with. And he'd weave it around the tables and down to the back of the wing and into this hatch that somebody spoke about earlier where our clock punch lights. This rat would be there. So the poor unsuspecting new guy, he goes down to the end to start with something to expect. He aims into this cabinet to his clock punch. This rat. Why not? Most of them screamed. They're on the ankle express to the front of the wing. Meanwhile, doing that to the thread. And it's chasing them. Just unbelievable. Another one that we did was we get an empty 45-gallon drum on the marker plant. Guy'd walk by, drop that steel drum behind him. Oh my goodness, you should see those people run. We had a lot of fun up there. Sadly, there was a lot of bad stuff through that with riots and that. One in particular that I was involved with, we had 72 inmates on the field, and there was a rec officer, and myself, another couple officers, and a supervisor, and they decided that we weren't going inside that night. And it was just after the couple of correctional officers were killed down in Quebec, and they're all circling us, pushing us. I'm telling you, I don't want to tell you, I was scared. I thought I was going home in a box. On the whole, that building was great. I was sad to see it torn down. That building was in better shape when we left it. It's 50 years old, and that new building is up in Lindsay. We were there, what was it, 3 weeks, guys, for training? Or a month, whatever. But anyway, when we first went there, there was a guy in a little wagon towing around a epoxy filling cracks that were about 2 inches wide. And that's before there was even an inmate. And it is just a dangerous, dangerous layout. If you know anybody that wants to do these corrections, tell them no. It's just an awful building. I've been out of there, I've been retired 8 years now, and did 8 years there. It's just a terrible thing. We've been doing a lot of talking here. Is there any questions that we can answer? There's quite a few of us here. Is there any questions that you have? Yes. Yes. My feeling is that I was on the ICIT team, and we trained in the tunnel, like below the main floor. there's all the steam pipes, water pipes, some of the electrical, and all those pipes were wrapped with asbestos. And we were training in there, no match, no nothing. The government finally did get a team in to take the asbestos out, and they actually did it while the kitchen was up and running. They just put plastic up, and you know, I feel sorry for those poor people. You know, like, asbestosis is not a good way to go. I'm sure that some of the people that we have lost through training, maybe by lung cancer or smoking, but I bet you some of it's because of that. They had torn the jail down, and I went up there one time, and there was about, I'm going to say, 14 steel 45-gallon drums that we had, and somebody had kicked one of them over, and to me, and I'm no chemist, but it looked like asbestos to me. It's not a good thing. I can't remember how long it took them. It took them a long time to get the asbestos out. Now, they claim that it was done safely and properly, but I just hope that I don't end up with COP or whatever they call it. But I'm not looking forward to that. Any other questions? Yeah. What? Oh, very much so. Yeah. Like Dr. Van Loon was talking about with the different wings and classifications, they were by themselves in a special range. You wouldn't care about them in the general population. One thing about Millbrook, they were fair to the inmates, and they treated them well. In my estimation, I thought they were very good. You know, ones that were punished, they deserve it. But they did their, whether it was one day, 10 days, in five in which the detention went off. But there was some nasty ones. Some of them were crazy. Oh, geez. You just you're right. It was some of the staff were too confused. Chances are you may have to quit spin this wheel. Some of these guys might remember more. Yeah. Demeter was there for a while. Yeah. We had one of the Chevallo boys, George Chevallo. He was there. Can you guys think of anybody else?
Johnny Kane was there from WWF.
We had more of those guys, more in Lindsay than here.
John Kane.
He was there. Yes. I can only think of one. Yeah, that I remember, and the alleged story was that this inmate was getting out, and that he said that he was going to rape this other guy's sister, and that didn't sit well. So before he left, the inmate put a pillowcase over his head right in the middle of the day room, and hit him, knocked him down, and took his boots and just kept banging his head against the door. It wasn't good. That I'm aware of, yes. Yeah. Somebody went to the super and complained about the dog. Who was the other injured guy? Yeah, we kept a pretty good handle on the place. There was the odd time that, you know, there was no control, things were just too crazy, but luckily, quiet heads prevailed, and we got things settled down. Anybody else? Yes. Very, very much so, in my opinion, yeah. Very much so, yeah. 26 people in a wing that's probably as wide as I am the wall. And maybe further back to the washrooms there. That's a lot of people to put in one space and think that they're going to get along. It made it more dangerous. Like they went from 26 to 40, and then near the end, I think it was the odd man to even triple bunk, like my mattress was on the floor, and allegedly, I'm not the powers that be, but the rumor I hear is that the more inmates that are in an institution, that affects the superintendent's pension. So that was the rumor I heard.
Well, so I knew
when I started, they had approximately 260. And then from there, once they started doing the double one. No, it was just. Yeah, we never got one more staff than I'm aware of. I guess I was at Lindsay at that point. I don't know. Too many. Yeah, way too many. Yeah, that was a sad thing. You know, there was rumors going around that Lindsay was going to be killed, and that Milchick wasn't going to get it. I said, no, it works fine. All you had to do was take a drive right from the 115 all the way up to where the jail was built, which was a brand new highway. We knew that it was going to be built there. And it's sad because there were so many good businesses, good people who were hired there. It was a sad thing for the whole town of Millbrook here, I think, when that happened. Rex Park, there's a guy that sits in my mind. God rest his soul. Yeah, great guy. Little story about him. I wasn't unemployed there at the time, but back then it was very militaristic. Rex Park, being an ex-military boy, he stood straight up. Ramrock straight. In those days, you had to wear a tie and a hat. Anyway, he went into the kitchen. It was a great time. I don't mind telling you, and it's too bad that George doesn't want to put this in his hand. I'm sure you can tell Ross, but the food those people produce was amazing. Anyway, he wasn't supposed to be in the kitchen, and the superintendent walked through the door. Well, it happened to be pork chop day for lunch. And supposedly, the superintendent just caught looks of Rex as he put the pork chop in his head and like, half. So the superintendent walked over and had this long conversation with Rex, and the grease started running down. There was a lot of fun times like that.
That was
a lot of laughs. Anyway, I've been up here way too long. Let somebody else have a chance. Thank you.
Thanks, Art.
Okay, I forgot to say one thing when I was standing up earlier. I worked for a short time at the Lindsay Jail, and as the only person one day this one inmate had some sort of a problem, and he was wanting to know what to do for it, and I said, well, I don't know what you do here, but in Millbrook, we do such and such a thing. And he looked at the other inmate and said, and when I very first started working in Millbrook, I walked down George Street one day, and I thought, oh my God, I feel safe to work inside jail than working down George Street. and for the historical society, there's some papers like this on the wall members staff and Nova could sign their name and where they live now and what the job was to Carter Jail.
That was something I wanted to kind of close on, is I know I was in elementary school when the jail closed, and when the jail left town, it also meant I lost a lot of friends, because a lot of people had to move away. I know people kind of scattered out and dispersed after the jail closed, so I'm curious to just kind of get a rough idea, how far did people come today to come to this event? Where did people end up?
Nora.
Nora.
I'm glad I was there.
You might win a prize for that.
It was one of the worst nights of my life.
Any other places that people ended up? Or I just talked to a couple earlier that were right. Brooke. All right, well, this has been an interesting... Oh, Celia wants to talk.
I just want to tell you what my impressions of the correctional center were. I moved into Millbrook in 1981 on July 1st. My husband stayed for about a day and a half and then went back to the bush because he's a geologist and he works away a lot, leaving me with a 16-month-old and me pregnant. And one night, this awful sound came out over filling the whole town. And it was the fire alarm, the siren. I had never lived in a small town and I didn't know what the fire alarm was. So I immediately assumed that there was a breakout from the correctional center and I shook in my bed for hours. But what I also remember is the 3 o'clock rush hour. I lived on King Street, and at 3 o'clock, you could not cross King Street. No. Keep your children away from the street. Watch the dog. It was amazing. It was a wonderful thing to have that much, know that many people worked in Millbrook and were making a living here. It was an interesting time. And from what the stories tell me, it was a good time. I know there were bad moments, bad things, but you guys were a team. And I'm really pleased that we got you together. Thanks to Alex, or whoever had this incredible brain. He's taking all the credit. It's so wonderful to see you all out. And as long as the Legion will keep you, stay and have a good time. Thank you very much for coming.
Sorry, folks, just one more thing that I forgot to mention when I was up here before. There was a meeting at the school, County Road 10. I think they were trying to decide what they were going to do with the jail, what they were going to do with the land. And the people that set it up, I don't know them, they're probably way smarter than me, but they had people around the room that you could go and ask questions to. And they did that on purpose so that nobody, or not everybody, could hear all the questions and find out, what was really happening. They were very, in my estimation, deceptive doing that. They should have had somebody up on the stage, maybe had two mics, asking questions, getting answers from those five people. I don't know who owns the land now, sadly, that the jail is gone, because it was in better shape when they tore it down than the new places. But the big thing is contamination. And that was one thing that I tried to get through to them that evening. Those diesel tanks, yes, I understand they're taken out, but how many gallons or liters has leaked down into the ground? Where the annex was, to the north of where the institution was, from 1954 until they closed it, for a long, long time, they had a dump. Everything, batteries, dry cleaning fluid, you name it, went into that dump. So if the village of Millbrook is even thinking about buying it, doing something with it, they want to think long and hard, because whoever puts their name on that deed, they're responsible for the title. I'm telling you, it's just going to be one. It's just terrible. And what I worry about, right at the bottom of the hill, there's a little brick house, or a shed. And that was the main water supply for the institution. And I was there one time for security, and we were checking the water quality and the condition of the wellhead. And this wellhead was what had to be as tall as this room. Great big pieces of steel of the water we could flow into. Well, they pulled that out, and then they dropped a camera down in there. And this guy, with his little camera, described to me that what's down there is approximately the size of what the Sky Dome is. Not the Rogers Center, but the Sky Dome. And he said that, you know, the water is just amazing. There's so much they'll never ever pump it dry. How long is it going to take for that contamination from the diesel tanks or from that dump to percolate its way down the hill and contaminate that water supply? That's something that, the city, the village of Millbrook really wants to get a handle on. Anyway, sorry to answer. Yeah. Hope I can answer. Well, that's a good question. I wasn't there when they dug those tanks out, but I would think that when those steel tanks ruptured and it was percolating down through, because that whole area is all sand, that's going to come down, and who knows where it's going to stop. Yep. Those little square. Oh, are they round? Oh, okay. Allegedly, they're supposed to be testing. Yeah. So I have to turn it off.
We'll formally close for the night. Anyone that's come from out of town, I encourage you to go up and check it out. The jail property has now become the number one dog park in the area. Try to keep it a secret, but that is the go-to spot. Thank you, everyone, for coming out tonight. It's fantastic to hear the stories. Good to come to the whole world.